Welcome everyone to Refuge Radio. This is episode 3 that you're listening to. We are your hosts. My name is Brendan.
And my name is Gaines, with a weird vocal intonation, but I am Gaines. So yeah, episode 3, we're 3 in. I'm happy with that so far. I think we've had 2 good ones. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been going awesome. We had a great guest last week. We had a opportunity in the first episode to kind of share a little bit about our own stories, our own faith journeys, and what that has looked like for us to kind of grow up in like a fundamentalist Christian background and kind of coming out as gay and how we have experienced that. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And Gaines, do you want to tell us what we're going to be focusing on today?
I sure will, Brendan. Sorry, I just wanted to make that over-the-top radio style. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about a topic that many queer people have experienced, the idea of church leaders, mentors, family members, friends who are telling them how they should live out their sexuality. And like a lot of this breaks down starting out, if we're talking on an umbrella level, to 2 concepts that you may or may not be familiar with called, and by you, I mean our listeners, side A and side B theology. Brendan, do you kind of want to break that down?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of where this is coming from for all of you that haven't really thought about this before, looked into this before, or haven't been a part of like evangelical fundamentalist culture or deconstructing from that culture or just being a queer person in that space and needing to think through these things. There are basically, so even going a step above side A and side B, there's a bigger umbrella too of there's affirming theology and non-affirming theology. So basically non-affirming theology is where you have like some like white, usually straight, heteronormative, cisgender group that is like, you being LGBTQ is not okay, that is not welcomed here. It is more tolerated rather than accepted in any sort of way into like a church faith space. Affirming theology basically is a little bit more in the realm of God made you LGBTQ, that is a part of your identity. It's something you need to embrace and love and not reject. And then within that kind of more affirming theology, there are 2 variations that we call side A and side B. And really how it breaks down are side A people are queer folks who choose to interpret the Bible and understand their own faith and say having sexual relationships that express our sexual identity is okay for me and okay with my concept of God. And side B is basically like, I feel like for myself, I need to, even though I'm embracing my identity as queer, I need to live a celibate lifestyle.
Yeah. And an important thing to note here, and that we're addressing through this entire discussion today, is that when celibacy is imposed by cisgender heterosexual people onto queer individuals, that is non-affirming. And that's what we're addressing. This side A and side B theology gets very, people discuss it a lot, to put it gently. It's a very highly, it is a very touchy discussion, especially I would say more so when it comes to side B and the queer community. And we're not here to discuss that today, maybe on a later, but we're more here to discuss the idea of our stories and the concept when celibacy is imposed on queer people. And that's our discussion point today. I think that covers it pretty well. If you have questions, yell at us on Twitter or me. I don't think Brendan's on Twitter. So
yeah.
Yeah. So you can yell at me on Twitter or whatever social media you want. Anyway, so Brendan, what are, now that we've gone over all this, what are some of your initial thoughts on all this?
That is a great question. So my initial thought on this is coming from a, so as you all know, as I feel like I mentioned in like every episode of this podcast, I'm studying to be a social worker. I'm studying therapy. And so that's like, I feel like that's always my go-to lens for how I am viewing these things and kind of thinking about it in terms of social justice. And what does it look like in any sort of a space to give people equal access, equal opportunities, equal rights? And I think of this idea of imposed forced celibacy on an entire people group. And I guess my initial thoughts are how unethical that is, and how I would argue it's to the point of it being immoral to do so, especially when you have the Harvard Medical Group specifically. They've done several surveys and studies, and they have found that people that are partnered, well, I should actually clarify that, people who are partnered in a relationship that they enjoy, like there's satisfaction there, there's relational satisfaction. They live longer than single people. They have fewer strokes and heart attacks. There's a lower chance for depression and mental health issues. They are less likely to have advanced cancer at any time of diagnosis and more likely to survive cancer. And they are more likely to survive major operations. And a lot of researchers theorize this is because when we're partnered and we have that strong, intimate bond and connection, it increases our immune function. And also when we're in an intimate partnered relationship, we improve as individuals in a sense. We do things to take care of ourselves because we have someone there that is looking out for us, that we have someone to take care of ourselves for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And of course, too, there's less loneliness, social isolation, because we're in that partnered bond.
Yeah, for sure. And there's that aspect of the reverse, too. The fact that not only taking care of yourself for others, but you're taking care of them as well. So, you know, the whole idea of partnership is, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so when you look at it from the perspective of, there are significant health benefits to someone having a positive partnered relationship, to rob an entire people group of that and say, you aren't allowed to have this, I don't understand how we can say, first of all, I don't understand how we can say that is good. And second of all, there is no way of understanding love, can we say that is love to do that to an entire group of people?
Yeah. And I mean, part of the danger and is this usually starts young too. I know, even though it wasn't, I didn't come out till I came out slowly to people, and I wasn't fully coming out till like college, but high school and middle school, like this idea was taught. So even though, you know, it wasn't directly said to me, that idea was taught. And so when that's getting impressed on you, like that's even further damage, you know, when you're taught that at a young age.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that makes sense, because that's when it's at that young age that we are looking at our world. We're looking at what the values of the people around us are, and we're imitating them. And so when we pick up those values, we internalize that and then imitate it in our own lives. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's tough. So I guess, what experiences, gains have you had in your own upbringing? So I know you mentioned growing up, you've kind of heard some of these messages. I guess, what more did that look like for you as you were growing up, and this message of celibacy, how did that come up for you, I guess? What, or how did that come up in the faith settings you found yourself in?
Yeah, I think the biggest start to it, I mean, like I said, I had heard sermons and all that when growing up, and like, I don't think I even fully, you know, I was still figuring out who I was in middle school and high school. Wasn't sure on where on the spectrum I fell, but the clearest answer was when in college, when I was kind of, I was with someone in this relationship mess, but I had a mentor in our Christian fellowship that was on the campus. It was kind of a Young Life similar concept. So not exactly Young Life, but basically I was just told point blankly, you know, you have to be celibate, more or less. And it's like, you know, that's the way that you need to be. And it's like, when people tell you that and they throw what you see as facts, and you're already in an emotional state that's like confused, or, you know, or not confused, but in a rough state, it's easy to fall into that, or, you know, it just makes it the added depression. But yeah, I was basically told, you know, you basically have to be celibate. That's the only solution, or you're going to hell. I mean, that was basically it. And also through all that, they kind of challenged if I was even saved, you know? Right. And like, so if I don't do this, I'm going to hell. And it's like, well, that doesn't seem right, but you're someone telling me this who knows things. Yeah. I mean, that was like kind of the start for me, the initial, yeah.
And when you kind of heard that message, Gaines, that you had to be celibate in order to not go to hell or whatever the consequence was as well on top of that, how did you internalize that? How did that make you feel?
For me, it was difficult because it didn't make sense. It was like in my... at the time, very evangelical growing up mindset, everything I had heard, you know, and had been kind of drilled into my brain, it made sense in that, if that makes sense, like faith-wise and everything that had always kind of been taught to me to that point, and that made sense in that lens. But now through experience and what I was actually living and experiencing, it no longer made sense, because I was like, he's saying this, which lines up with what I've learned growing up, but now that I'm actually living who I am and the experience I am, how could a loving God send anyone to hell? And how could a loving God actually want people not to be who they are and to love those that they love? How can a loving God not want love? And that became the question that, like, I really wrestled with for years and years and years. And like, but yeah, and it was as simple as that. What about you? So what was your first experience kind of like experiencing this or running into this?
That's tough, because I refused to even allow myself to, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like when I was in high school, it was like, I'm not gay. Mm. I'm, you know, I have this problem, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Where I'm like drawn to guys, but it's not who I am. It's just these thoughts that I have. And that's, you know, that's something I just have to manage, or I need to find the right girl and I'll be cured. Like, there was just so much so many stories I was telling myself. This is a phase. I'm going to grow out of this. A lot of these narratives I would hear from different people in my life, if I happened to open up to them about anything regarding that.
Yeah.
And so it really, for me also, wasn't until college because I think maybe once when I was in high school, my youth pastor talked about gay people. And it was very much like, if you are struggling with, you know, these thoughts, come to the altar and we're going to pray for you. And so it's like the intervention for being gay wasn't accept yourself and live a life of celibacy. It was, you need the demon, because that was never the language that was used, but that's kind of how it felt like for me, is like, we need to exorcise this demon out of you. So you'll be healed and then you can have a heterosexual orientation and live that out. So it was like this idea of being celibate wasn't even something I thought about until I was in college and I was sitting with my advisor. So I got very close to my advisor, basically, who is the person who schedules your classes. we always had very
classic college friendship.
We had very intimate and deep conversations, and I opened up with him about that I was attracted to men, and I was like, I don't know what to do with that. And I just remember he looked at me and he was like, what if this never goes away? What are you going to do? And he wasn't being like, he basically was like, I'm assuming in his mind, he's like, I've talked to a lot of people with this and it never goes away. And I think he was very gently trying to nudge me towards the fact that these things, this way you are thinking is not healthy. And it's, you know, you're hurting yourself. And, you know, ultimately, really, I was hating myself and rejecting a part of myself, which he kind of picked up on and was encouraging me in that direction. I think that was the first time I was thinking along the lines of embracing that part of my identity. And then the idea was, well, then what do I do with this now? What is like the ethical, moral thing to do? I had been on some dates with girls and I always just felt so uncomfortable with that. Because I'm like, they're going to want something from me that I am not going to be able to give them. And that really bothered me. But I wanted companionship. I wanted to be close with people. Like I feel like the way I am wired, I mean, the way we're all wired, we all want connection. We all want intimacy. We all want closeness. But I think for me specifically, it's like, I love being close to people. I love that connection. And so not having that in some way was hard. And so I'm like, so what is that going to look like for me? And doing some conversations with some other people at my college, that was the first time that this idea of maybe the most ethical thing for me to do is to live a sort of more celibate lifestyle. Mm. And it was never like strictly imposed on me in the way that it was with you, Gaines, where someone's like, you have to be celibate. But it was highly implied that in order to be socially acceptable and still be considered a Christian, you had to be. Like that was, if you stepped outside of that, you're stepping outside of God's will for your life and you were no longer welcome in a position of respect in the Christian community. You may be like tolerated or you may be included in like a large gathering of church people, but you would not be someone who would be in the intimate circle, someone who would be in the room making decisions for the church or in a position of leadership or something like that. So the rooms where I loved finding myself, I loved being in positions of influence. And so I really struggled with the idea of giving that up in order to have an intimate partner relationship. It felt like the social cost of coming out and not being celibate felt too high. And so I, even though it was never like, you must do this, it just, I felt that I must do it in order to be socially acceptable. And so then I kind of moved in that direction, I would say, after college.
Gotcha.
That was a very long answer to your question.
No, it's good though. Yeah. No, that's good. I feel like some things you're like talking about too, just church culture wise, made me think I had seen how our church also treated other people in the queer community, as like you were talking about, like kind of the altar call to pray for and like exercise, you know, is not a demon, but almost, you know, it's like this thing. And it's like, I've seen churches have their token, you know, they're like token gay or the, you know, it's like, oh, they're allowed at the, you know, they're allowed at the functions and, you know, they've got their thing, but they fit in the box. They fit in our church appropriate box because they don't have a partner. They're, you know, so they can bring and do this thing, but, you know, they have to follow the rules. They have to, and in non-affirming communities, it's like, that's how it kind of works, but that shouldn't be the case, you know? And that's kind of thing. One of the reasons I didn't come out till later was because I didn't want to be a project. And that was celibacy, imposed celibacy on its own too. Just the fact like so pushed down by the culture. And there's so many, I've heard so many stories similar too, like to yours, you know, not the same, but, you know, churches, as long as the LGBTQIA community fits in a certain box at non-affirming churches, it's okay. But
right.
That's it. Don't make us uncomfortable, you know. Don't be too gay. Don't be too, you know, like this or that.
Right.
Yeah. Matt Nightingale wrote a great article on this. And I don't know if you read that. It's and I'm forgetting the name, but he talks about the fact that like someone told him, like, I wish you wouldn't like show off as much, matter of fact. And he's like, I don't think that's the case, and explains, you know, why it's like important though for representation of the queer community. But yeah.
Gaines, unpack for me. You heard this message that you kind of internalized about you need to be celibate in order to be acceptable, godly, etc. How did you see that message as your life progressed? How did you see that impacting your emotional health?
Yeah. So for about a year, I internalized it. It was like, because I respected that person, I fought internally with that idea, but I was like, yeah, they must be right. They went to Bible school and they're a missionary and all that good stuff. So they must know. Even though we did have like quite the arguments on it, but I still more or less followed that idea. But it did, like you were talking earlier about couples having better health together and all that. And I realized this is affecting my mental health, not being single, but a concept I don't agree with. So I started like trying to read more and explore, you know, different things online. And I was reading like side B authors and I was like, okay, I get some of this, but it still wasn't satisfying for me. I wasn't, the angsty part of me, I loved it. But like on like a true happiness level, I was like, this isn't good enough. And I just kept coming back to that simple question I was saying earlier, like, how can a loving God like not want people to love each other? When I started learning more about fully affirming side A theology, I was like, yeah, this makes sense. And it's like, just because I learned something all growing up doesn't mean that's right. I mean, there's people who, you can't use that as an excuse. Just, oh, I grew up learning this, therefore it must be right. Well, people do use that excuse, and we know there's many issues right now in the world that like we're having that problem with. And they're in the back of my mind. I still battle with like, oh, well, you grew up, you know, so this has to be. It's like, no, that leads to like pain and like mental anguish. And yeah, but yeah, it's been years and years of like working through all that. And I think for some people, it's a jump from not affirming to side A immediately. But for me and others I've talked to, it's been a journey. It's been a path from one to the other.
Yeah.
I know that's a long way to get to that answer and may have been meandering a bit, but yeah.
No, that was good, man.
Yeah. You said it was similar for you, a little bit similar for you, just kind of that the advisor, class advisor, as you're getting, well, I shouldn't. Yeah. So the class advisor was explaining or not explaining, started like asking those questions almost for you, right?
Yes. And so I basically came out to a lot of people in college, I decided. And instead of coming out as like, hey, I'm gay, I was like, I'm same-sex attracted was the language that I used.
Yeah.
And kind of began the journey of embracing that as a part of my identity rather than as something that I'm like, we're going to pray this away or this is going to go away. I basically was like, this is a part of who I am. And I hope you can accept that. And I want to welcome you into that part of my life. And I've got a lot of really good responses from people, of course, because it was within that socially acceptable realm of what queer people can do. So that was kind of that. I think I was technically still non-affirming with like a dash of side B, I guess you could say. But I definitely did not think being gay was okay. Like I would never call myself gay. Like I would never use that language. And it wasn't until I had a nervous breakdown that I called myself gay for the first time. And so I think I probably made, it was a long journey of being celibate, to be honest, and trying to live that life. And I hit a breaking point where I'm like, I am so lonely. I am so depressed. I do not feel like God made me to be alone. Like I am not someone who God blessed with this gift of celibacy. And I do not feel like God called me to celibacy.
Right.
And so I just hit a breaking point. And that was when for me, I started to really question whether this was the correct thing for us as a church to do in response to queer people in the church. And so that is when I started kind of looking into affirming theology. And I heard things like side A or side B for the first time. And I kind of just came from the mindset of like, if I'm going all in.
Yeah.
So not that side B is not all in, I shouldn't say that, but yeah. So I ended up on the side A portion of affirming theology. I've had a lot of people though, from a cisgender heteronormative mindset talk to me about how the queer community is so anti celibacy how we really look down on people that are celibate. And it's very interesting to me because people would bring this up to me as if I had somehow like brought this up in the first place, but they would bring it up like, what is your problem with celibate people? And they would always say it like, I somehow like had a problem with celibate people. I'm like, yeah. Did I say I had a problem? Where are you getting this? But okay.
Yeah.
And so they would be like, what's wrong with, you know, someone who's closeted, who is just celibate, like, why can't you be okay with that? I would get that a lot when I first came out from people. And my argument was always, you know, my question for them would be, if we lived in a world where a same gender relationship partnership was seen as God ordained as a opposite gender partnership, would you still choose to be celibate? And if the answer is yes, awesome. Why would I have a problem with that? That's their life. You know what I mean? And I think that's where a lot of side B people fall. But it's like, if it's the answer is no, then the problem isn't me not accepting celibate people. It's our society putting all this pressure on gay people and queer people in general to fit in a box we don't fit in and making us miserable and then asking us, why isn't this enough for you?
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing you said too, with all this, why is like being in the closet not enough on top of just the celibacy. It's like no one should have to be like hiding, but yeah, like the celibacy built right into that, it's like exactly what you're saying. Just you shouldn't have to be forced to that. You know, Paul talks, it's a gift. No one's forced. A gift is not a forced thing. Ugh. So frustrating. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a question I've been brought up to as well. Yeah. And the other thing with the idea of celibacy is I feel like many heterosexual people who are preaching or teaching that I've heard always put not only they put the queer community and like just infidelity or like any type of unhealthy sexual activity together, and they don't separate those two. They never acknowledge like they're not talking about a same-sex couple, and they never acknowledge that possibility. Like,
yeah,
so it's either you're celibate or you're in a giant orgy with like 5,000 people, and it's like, what, those are the only choices? Is that really what you think is going on like all the time? Yeah. And that's what always seems to be from like church leaders, and I'm like,
yeah, absolutely.
And maybe that's my experience, but that's what I seem to get.
I feel like for me, usually when they talk about like the sin of homosexuality, I'm using air quotes, everyone, if you can't see, this is audio.
Only I can.
Oh, yeah, only Gaines can see. I'm using air quotes. And it was always in the same breath as like substance abuse and gambling and all of these things that are actually destructive of someone's life. Well, let me rephrase that. Can be destructive of someone's life if they are abused. Where I, even as a closeted fundamentalist kid, I remember thinking to myself, and then occasionally thinking aloud, I'm like, all these things we talk about, I see the negative impact of these things in people's lives. Like if you abuse drugs, you blow up your life in a lot of different realms. Like you lose connection with people around you. You lose focus on the things that you value, and everything just becomes about that substance and getting the next whatever. Where it's like with embracing a gay identity, I didn't see it being unhealthy for people. The only unhealthy thing I saw was that people hated them. And so I was like, why, from an objective standpoint, is this bad? And I never got a good answer to that question.
No,
ever, from anyone. And I always really struggled with that. Even before I was kind of wrestling with my own identity, I was just like, what is actually the big deal with this? And so in my own unpacking and deconstruction and kind of talking about what you were just talking about too, it's like it gets lumped in with all of these sinful, again, air quotes, sinful things. And there's really no evidence of any destruction in someone's life that is simply associated with having a gay, lesbian, bisexual, pansexual, insert your sexual orientation here, identity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do want to say, like, a big reason we've said multiple times we're doing this podcast is honestly for people who are peer pressured or spiritually pressured, whatever, to stay in the closet or stay celibate or abused to stay celibate, whether that be verbal, emotional, or God hope not physical, not that any are worse than, you know, the others, but we just want you to know that there are people who do care and that it is okay to be your full self. And there are churches out there, books out there. I mean, Refuge Radio is born out of Refuge Faith Community, which is on Facebook, it's on Instagram, it's on Twitter. All these places where you can come ask questions and be part of community that welcomes you and loves you as who you are. And so I want to bring that around and make sure people know that.
Thank you all for listening in. We've loved being able to share this space with you and share a little bit of our experience that we've had. We hope that you found encouragement, and then we hope you found solidarity. And we truly hope wherever you're at in your life, that you find joy, that you find peace, and you find refuge wherever you go. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to Refuge Radio with your hosts, Gaines Taylor and Brendan Bell. Audio production and music were provided by Inclusion Audio, with musical help from Lyndon Braun. Find Refuge Faith Community on social media, on Instagram at refuge_faith_community, or on Twitter at refuge_faith.